Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the IMI Talking Leadership podcast. Today, my guest is Marianne Roux, who is a future of work expert, having worked in people-focused roles across three continents over the past 30 or so years. Marianne was a speaker at our recent Senior Leaders Breakfast Briefing event, and we do have an upcoming program on adaptive HR, which Marianne is running for us. So today we'll have a quick chat about the concept of adaptive HR and some of the future trends coming down the line. So Marianne, I did have you on the podcast about a year or so ago now, so some of our listeners are quite familiar with you and your background, but if you just want to give us a quick introduction before we get going.
Oh, no, thank you for that. And thank you for having me again. It's one of my favorite topics. A South African organizational psychologist with a PhD in leadership fit for the future of work. I've held two HR director roles. I've been in four big consulting firms, as you said, around the world. And I am a business school professor and run a consulting firm. So three main areas is adaptive HR. Let's transform HR into a growth driver to fit the future of work, leadership development, and just really future of work strategy. Just getting our heads around that is really what I spend my time doing.
So Marianne, I had you on the podcast, as I said, about a year ago. We spoke about adaptive HR, but what's new in the past year, both in terms of adaptive HR and HR trends in general?
A lot, you know, and it's actually, I sometimes say to people, everybody thinks I know it all, but I don't actually know it all. I have learned just a little bit faster than everybody because it's my job. And that means I read 52 books a year and I literally look at everything I can possibly look at, because I didn't know a year or two ago how to do hybrid and flexible work at this scale, right? And with these issues that we're facing. So that's all very new for us, even though we mention it in the previous programs, that of course is a much bigger focus now. But also generative AI came in the last year in a way that nobody expected. And so the digital transformation we were busy with has taken on a whole new angle in terms of service delivery from HR. And I think it has forever changed the roles and the skills that are required in HR. So there's a much bigger focus on that as well. And sustainability, the earth has had a tipping point and people are much more focused on this in their strategy, and green skills are becoming huge. So all of these things, HR has to take a lot more cognizance of, and have been quite slow in the digital transformation and operating model transitions. And so this is the time to invest in the technology and to really invest in the reskilling and upskilling. So we really are tipping it towards those kind of focus areas now.
Marianne, I'm going to come back to sustainability because I think that's a really interesting topic. But before we get there, COVID and AI have probably been the two things that have transformed the future of work the most within recent times. Can you tell us a bit about the impacts they've had on work?
Yeah, so the future of work, a lot of people think is very new, but it's actually been with us since 2014. We just didn't give it much attention because everybody thought they had a lot of time. So, you know, that really was a seismic shift for us when, you know, automation, AI and robotics came in the way it came in. So it was very much about technology, but it wasn't so much about such a big scale of change to work. And then when COVID happened, it immediately threw everybody into remote and hybrid, of course, as we spoke about. So completely new way of leading people, and just a lot of pressure. And now the debate of return to office or stay hybrid, flexible, and all the ways people feel about work now has changed. And then we haven't done the digital transformation that's required. And so now we've accelerated. Everybody has a 2030 strategy. And I keep saying to them, that's wonderful. But you're 10 years behind just on the future of work piece. Now, AI and COVID has accelerated that. And now if you think about it, it's 2024. You only really have 6 years left to achieve that strategy. So the amount of things you have to do and the transition you have to make is so significant now. Where people work, what they do, what machines do, what humans do, how people feel about work, and how people are led have all changed at the same time. And we've never seen such a big combined seismic shift in the world of work as we are seeing now. And none of the outdated models work.
I think that piece about outdated models is something that you'll cover a lot in the program that you have coming up with us. So thanks so much for giving us a little taste of that. And now I do want to talk a bit about sustainability, diversity, equity, inclusion, which is all just known as DEI in an organizational context. So why is it not quite as straightforward anymore as just having a recycling bin in your office or, you know, promoting a woman, those sorts of very basic things? What actually needs to be done by organizations to successfully embed sustainability and diversity initiatives?
I've been really fascinated by what's gone on in the last year. There is a massive pushback. So at the same time, we're trying to accelerate sustainability and DEI, and we've got multi-generations working together. Every time I do a future work keynote, people say, can you just talk about Gen Z and how they feel about work and, you know, how we need to lead, because they want purpose, they want well-being, they want flexibility. And half the time, people are not in the office when new people are coming on board. And there's all these new challenges that people didn't think about. And then there's this pushback at the same time. I'm seeing DEI people leave organizations and the jobs being diminished. And I see the same time this push for, we need more productivity and our margins are becoming tighter, Marianne. So, you know, we really need to get, you know, we've done the DEI bit, you know, we've got the women in there, we've done the International Women's Day. I think with both those things, because they're complex, people don't like complexity. So they go to the things that are easier to do, which is let's do a restructure or let's do a policy or let's do an International Women's Day event. They don't want to actually lean into the real difficult work, which is the reskilling, upskilling, the challenging of behavior, the male allies that are required to make the shifts. So we can't do performative stuff anymore, and it hasn't delivered the results that it promised. So it really is time now to stand back and say, what does this mean for our organization? And what processes, policies, behaviors do we need to embed in this organization to make this an inclusive, attractive organization that can deliver sustainably high performance in an inclusive way where our employees are well and where people feel connected to a purpose and some meaning in their lives? And that's the hard work that needs to be done now. It's not performative, and it's not, we are not there yet. So there's a lot of work to be done.
Thanks very much, Marianne. Hopefully the first step towards organizations doing those more difficult things is to just acknowledge that they need to be done and that it really isn't just as easy as those Women's Day initiatives or those recycling pieces or anything that's kind of, you know, very, very high level. So I guess the future of work is here already, and it's changing more and more as we go along. And things like hybrid working and flexibility are just some of the considerations that HR professionals need to have. How can people within HR teams, and especially the leaders of those teams, help to future-proof the organization as a whole?
I think the role is more strategic than ever. But I think because so much manual process and spreadsheet chaos, as one of my colleagues called it the other day at the breakfast, is holding HR back. So HR has not, for me, the first thing I would do if I was an HR director today is I would make sure that I automate and put the bots in and let the machines do as much of the repetitive manual work and use predictive analytics and use those things so that my HR people can go and focus on the reskilling, the upskilling, and dealing with the future of work challenges in the organizations and go and solve the complex problems for sustainable, high growth, inclusive, well organizations. Until we get rid of all this, you know, spreadsheets everywhere, manual processes, and leaders phoning HR or emailing them for every frequently asked question that they can actually get the answer for on an intranet, we are not going to be able to do that work. So HR needs to very much look at its own operating model. And then it really needs to start to look, make sense for the rest of the organization of what the future of work means and what strategically and operationally need to be the priorities. And they need to do experiments. They need to learn how to do service design. They need to learn how to do human-centered design. HR needs to reskill itself significantly in AI. There is so much that AI can do to help HR in skills ontologies, job descriptions, personalized learning. we do not have to sit with a year-long workforce planning session on a spreadsheet. We don't. There are lots of tools and things available, but we need to rethink what we focus on, how we deliver that work, and become that proper strategic driver in the organization, a driver of growth. And it's way overdue, because we know this is the most important thing that needs to happen in any organization right now.
Marianne, as you've said, automation and AI are really the forces that are reshaping the workplace and the workforce at that. So how can HR professionals prepare themselves for the future and start to upskill in those areas, but also at the same time, prepare other employees across the organization for the jobs of the future?
Let's talk HR first. When I started the Adaptive HR program, there was nothing like it in the market. HR had learned 9-box models. They had learned, you know, job descriptions and job evaluation in a certain way, and everything, performance management in a certain way. And those things were wonderful in the 80s and 90s and maybe the early 2000s. And so a lot of people have not reskilled and upskilled since then. And not everybody wants to go and redo an entire master's or an MBA or something like that. So if you look around, yes, there are some smaller academy courses for very specific skill sets, and there's some great providers for that. But there wasn't one program that end-to-end taught everything from making sense of future work all the way to partnering with the C-suite, all the way to the employee experience, the OD required, the organization design, to really just uplift, reskill HR in all those things in one go. And even then, when they finish that, they will have to continue learning and growing, because I have to continue learning and growing all the time, because there'll be another seismic shift around the corner. And so HR has got to spend this year investing in their own development. In terms of employees, if you look at the data, it's quite stark. So we've got 3.5 to 5 years shelf life of any skills. Most organizations don't even have their skills ontology yet. They still have 600-page competency profiles that nobody uses. We need to go and build those skills ontologies, understand what machines can do better than humans in terms of the work and the tasks, not the jobs, the tasks. Then spend about 80% of our employees' time and effort on delivering work, and 20%, I really believe, should be spent on learning right now to reskill and upskill employees. Because by 2027, 50% of all the skills in your organization are going to be obsolete. And that is 3 years away from now. So how are you going to get across that spasm? You can't go and recruit for all of it, because there'll be very few of the high demand skills, and your wage inflation will be huge because everybody will be vying for those skills. And so you need to do a lot of building inside the organization. So for me, I'm really at the point where I'm like, do less, prioritize, rework, let machines do what they can do, let humans learn and do at the same time, and really make a transition across your skill set and what people are able to do. Your productivity will go up, your people, 4-day work weeks even, you know, with that machine will bring a whole different culture in. There's a lot we can do, and this is across all industries. I've done this in construction, I've done this in hospitality. You can do this, and we need to spend that time making sure our people are well, energized, motivated, and skilled. And then we really need to develop them positively to contribute and collaborate with each other. If we don't do that, I think that we will just fall behind. We will compete at very high wage levels with critical skills, and the organizations will not be future ready.
Marianne, I want to pick up on something you mentioned there, which is the 4-day work week. Do you think that by utilizing all of the available technologies, things like automation and AI, we could be productive enough that organizations would be able to comfortably move towards a 4-day work week without risking their organizational goals and their financial targets?
I actually think it's fascinating, because if you look at the research, even before we've done all the AI and automation, the 4-day work weeks were delivering 20% higher productivity and outcomes. So imagine what it can actually do, right, if we put in the AI and automation. And the other wonderful thing that it does, even I was talking to a hospitality client the other day, you know, hospitality is perfect for it. A lot of people want to work 3-day work weeks. If you want to do a 7-day operation, you can give somebody a 4-day work week and somebody else a 3-day work week. There are so many opportunities where jobs, if you are in a law firm, people can split law, legal cases. And of course, AI is doing all the research now for us, right, in the legal cases. So that, you know, cuts down half our time. Professional services are seeing this already. So for me, it's almost inevitable to go to the 4-day work week because your people will be well, they'll be rested, they'll be able to have life-work balance. Because at the moment, one of the things I mentioned at the breakfast, we've got these silly things going on. And I was reading where the 9-to-5 workday came from. It's fascinating. It's from somewhere in the 18, 1900s that the Monday to Friday work. People used to work 6 days and then and work 12-hour days, by the way. It's already come down to 5 days, kind of 8 hours a day. I know a lot of you work more than that. But now we really are at the point where we can do this. The school day finishes 2 hours before the workday. Who thought that was a good design? Parents are really struggling, and others, not just parents, people who are training for the Olympics, people who have care responsibilities. There's just no flexibility. Banks are not open on a Saturday. You know, the world is just not set up. So the moment people have a 4-day week, they're calm, they're engaged, they are delivering a lot more, and there's a lot less meetings, by the way, which, you know, I have a bit of a thing about too many meetings, because we don't really need all of them. We just fill whatever time is given to us.
Thanks very much, Marianne. It's so interesting to hear you speak about how the work day and the work hours have evolved over time, and it does make sense that the next step should be reducing the time that we're spending in the office and increasing the time that we have available to do other things. And I know that that would definitely appeal in particular to the younger generations who are really prioritizing their work-life balance and their mental health above traditional work values. So thank you very much for that. I want to end off with a question about the potential risks or pitfalls, because I do think that whenever you're implementing new technologies or you're using things that people aren't too familiar with, like AI, like automation, like all of these new tools that we're seeing come up, there are risks that leaders need to be aware of and that HR team members need to be aware of. So what are some of the potential risks associated with new technologies, and how can organizations work towards mitigating them?
I think the biggest risk is that the business model often that's presented with these technologies is that it's going to deliver immediate benefit. It is never like that. It is never like that. There's always a learning curve. There's always a test and learn. We are in the hype cycle of AI now, as my colleagues call it. So technology will not deliver the benefits immediately. I saw the other day that AI will probably only really start delivering massive benefits in 3 years. So you need to think like that. And one of the risks is, A, that we expect it to deliver immediately. The second thing I'm seeing is we cut staff and resources immediately at the same time that we haven't seen the benefits of the technology. So then you've got really burnt out staff with very few resources that have to do too much work. Then that's going to have your high performers and your best people leave because they will be exhausted. And people will also feel overwhelmed if you haven't given them that time to really get through that learning curve and really making sure that those benefits and experiments are working. So for me, that's probably risk number one. Risk number two is we throw technology in without doing the work of saying, what are the tasks that need to be done in this organization and which tasks are better done by humans and which tasks are better done by machines? So as Ravindra Sutasan says, let's deconstruct work, let's have a look at that, and then let's combine those pieces that are human into more meaningful, higher scale jobs. That work's not being done. The technology is just being thrown in. And then the reskilling, upskilling alongside to make sure that those humans flourish and can do those human bits, whether it's more relationship work or whether it's more analytics work, that work's not done. So then people are overwhelmed with what they then need to cope with. So those for me are the two biggest risks. And to get around that is to make sure that you have a realistic business case, that you do look at the work and you redesign the work quite significantly and you reskill and upskill your people timelessly so that they can really leverage the benefits of it rather than reactive layoffs, skills gaps starting, and people leaving because they just don't feel valued.
Thank you very much, Marianne. What I'm getting from this overall is that it's all about upskilling, it's all about reskilling and leveraging these new technologies in ways that will be beneficial to the organization, but also to the individuals that make up that organization. So thank you so much for shedding light on some of these adaptive HR practices and some of the new technologies for us today. And thank you to everyone for listening. You can subscribe on SoundCloud or on your preferred podcast provider to ensure that you don't miss an episode. Until next time.